A few days ago, I talked to a guy named Bob Erickson. And for a long time, his job was to write something that you have almost certainly read at some point in your life. He was one of the people who wrote the words on your tax form.
There aren't too many people in the world to specialize in designing tax forms. I found that much.
And you're one of those people.
I'm one of those people. That's how you got my name.
I had a few questions for Bob. Why is the 1040 called 1040?
Because that was the next form number in line.
So there was a form 1, 2, 3, blah, blah, blah.
You got it. There was.
Is there a 1041?
Yes, the 1041 is the income tax form for estates and trusts.
So it, like, almost made the big time.
Well, it didn't quite make it, did it?
Next question. Why are there so many acronyms on the form? The answer is to make it easier to read. Sort of.
To bring something down from the 12th grade down to the 8th grade. This is a true story. We changed the word self-employment tax to just the initials SE tax. Because if you call it SE tax, there are fewer syllables and letters. So it lowers the grade level,
now,
believe it or not.
I would say SE tax is harder to understand than self-employment tax.
It's easier to pronounce, and once you're told what it means, it may be easier the next time you see it to recognize it, I guess.
Also, acronyms like SE save space, and space is tight on the 1040, on the basic tax form that like 150 million people file every year. You can see these lines where it looks like the font is just ever so slightly smaller. Is that right? Is the font on that line smaller than the font on the line next to it?
Yeah, that's called condensed font. It's the same font, but it's condensed, meaning it's the same height, but the width is narrower. It's a narrower width.
You're just squeezing it in there?
We're squeezing it.
Like, the 1040 just fits on two pages.
Exactly, because we're trying to make it fit on two pages. That's why. You could make the form a lot longer, but it would certainly require a lot more paper. That's going to cost a lot more money to the taxpayers printing something out on their computer.
I love U.S. history. Big fan of the Constitution. Declaration of Independence has some great moments. Lincoln's second inaugural, I'm going to be honest, it makes me cry every time I read it. But I'm going to say IRS Form 1040 is way up there as a great American document. You know, it is not some founding myth. It is not the story we tell ourselves about the meaning of America. Form 1040 is something better. It's the reality. Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Jacob Goldstein.
And I'm Noel King.
Noel King, new Planet Money correspondent. Welcome to Planet Money.
Thanks, Jacob.
This is your first.
First time co-hosting.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, today on the show, with Malice Toward None, with Charity for All, it's stories from the tax form.
This podcast and the following message are made possible by Betterment. With more than $3 billion under management, Betterment is a popular automated investing service powered by smarter technology. Betterment provides personalized investment management and advice through cutting-edge software that recommends and manages diversified portfolios for each of your goals, saving you time and money. Betterment, investing made better. Get up to 6 months free at betterment.com/planetmoney.
Jacob.
Noel.
I need to tell you the truth.
Okay.
I do not do my own taxes.
Ooh, mazel tov. I feel like that's a sign of having, arrived.
I take them to an accountant. I don't know if I've arrived or I'm just confused.
But surely you know the 1040.
Yeah, I know the 1040.
Okay, we have some here, handy reference guides. And the 1040 is like your basic plain vanilla tax form, and lots of stuff on here. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, right up at the top, your first name and initial.
Sure.
Doesn't get easier.
Then last name.
First question, are you single? Are you married? A little further down, wages. How much do you make?
Yeah, lots of stuff. Very straightforward. But then you look around the form, and there are a few other things where you just look at them and you say, what is that? And what's it doing on my tax form?
So what we're going to do on the show today is we're going to take two of those weird lines, and we're going to look deep into them and say, what are they doing there?
Okay, first one, not technically a line. It's actually a box over here on the right-hand side, right below Social Security number.
Presidential election campaign, it says. Check here if you want $3 to go to this fund. Checking the box below will not change your tax or refund. Then there's two little boxes, one for you, one for your spouse.
So there is this thing, this presidential election campaign fund, where the U.S. government gives taxpayer money to presidential candidates, right? And that's what this box is about. The really striking thing to me about this is just giving you an option of where your tax money is going. This is not extra money. It's not, do you want to pay three extra dollars? It's just, do you want $3 of your taxes to go to this? Now, the government pays for tons of different things. You don't have the choice for any of those other things. You know, there's not a box somewhere else on here that's like, do you want a dollar to go to the Air Force to pay for a new fighter jet? There's not some secret line about, do you want 10 cents to go to keep up Yellowstone Park? It's just this one anomaly, just this one thing gives taxpayers the choice. And so I dug into this and I found someone who was present at the creation of the box. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Fred Harris.
Should I call you Senator? Senator Harris?
Whatever.
Fred Harris was a U.S. senator. This is back in the 1960s. And one day, he and a few other senators got called for a meeting with the president. It was Lyndon Johnson in the White House.
It was the cabinet room.
What's it like in there? It's a fancy?
No, it's just,
I don't know. I've never
been table there. With nice padded chairs.
And Johnson made this pitch for what would become this box on our tax form. Johnson said presidential campaigns are getting expensive to run. The money's coming from rich people and special interests. And Harris says Johnson made a pretty simple argument against this.
People who give money to help finance campaigns, they are not just doing so out of the goodness of their heart. They want something. They want influence.
Public funding would fix that, Johnson said.
But Johnson also knew that a lot of people really hated this idea. They were like, are you kidding me? You're going to take my tax dollars and you're going to spend them to fund your political campaign.
Yeah, and so Johnson said, we're going to give you a box on the tax form. You don't like this kind of public funding? Don't check the box. Totally up to you.
I thought it was just a terrific idea.
By 1973, the checkbox appears on the 1040 on the tax form. Back then, by the way, it was just $1 donation.
And it worked. About 30% of taxpayers checked the box. And when the next presidential election came around, the candidates were, in fact, funded by taxpayer money. It was matching funds in the primary and basically full public funding in the general election. Jimmy Carter took the money. President Ford took the money. You know who else took it?
I was able to run for president because of the campaign financing system.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
Fred Harris ran for the Democratic nomination, and the way things worked, to get that taxpayer money, he had to prove he was a viable candidate. He had to raise small donations from lots of people in multiple states as a way of showing, you know, he had a base of support. So he did that, and the federal government handed him a whole bunch of money for his campaign.
He got a grand total of $639,012.53, right on the nose, all from people who had checked that box on the tax form. And the money really helped. Fred was running a very low-budget campaign.
Yeah, he took public money, also took public transit.
I used city buses, and I stayed in people's homes as we went across the country.
So when you say you stayed in people's homes, like sleeping on sofas, or?
No. Generally, bedrooms. Sometimes they gave up their own bedroom for me.
Fred Harris, of course, lost that election. Jimmy Carter won it with the help of $22 million in public funding.
Yeah, and taxpayer money from the checkbox. I mean, this system was like up and running. You know, that taxpayer money it paid for the candidates' plane trips around the country and whatever, the lawn signs. And of course, public money, taxpayer dollar, paid for all those political ads.
Jimmy Carter, a military man and a man of peace.
In the 80s, all the major presidential candidates took the money. Ronald Reagan took it. You know, and he used it for whatever, for the plane trips and for all the ads and everything. And we're just going to kind of stop here because we found this one ad that was just so, I don't know what, so striking that we're like, we got to play this whole thing on the show. Here it is.
There is a bear in the woods. For some people, the bear is easy to see. Others don't see it at all. Some people say the bear is tame. Others say it's vicious and dangerous. Since no one can really be sure who's right, isn't it smart to be as strong as the bear? If there is a bear.
I don't know if there is a bear, Jacob, but that ad makes me very anxious.
Yeah, I think that's the point. One, two, I'm pretty sure there is a bear and that the bear is the Soviet Union. Not entirely clear. It's a metaphor. Anyway, for decades, every major candidate takes the money. In the 90s, into the aughts. Over time, though, taxpayers get less eager to check that box on the tax form, on 1040. the share of people checking the box falls from 30% at the beginning to 20%. By 2008, only about 7% of people are checking that box.
And that year, 2008, for the first time, a major candidate decided he's not going to take taxpayer funding. Barack Obama thought he could do better by going out and raising money on his own, and he did.
John McCain, who of course ran against Barack Obama, did take the taxpayer money. He got $84 million or so, and that was the cap under the law. There was still enough money in the checkbox fund. Barack Obama relied entirely on private donations, and he raised about $746 million, just blew McCain out of the water in terms of financing.
And that basically was the end of public financing. Neither of the nominees took it in 2012, and none of the candidates left in the race this year have taken public funding.
The checkbox, of course, is still in the law. It's still right here on our tax form. But, you know, because Congress never raised that funding cap to keep up with this huge growth in private campaign fundraising, the checkbox has become obsolete. I mean, even Fred Harris, who used the money to run for president, even he thinks it's obsolete. Do you check the box?
I don't now check the box.
You don't? Why not?
It's not being used. The system doesn't work, and so the box is really just useless.
Jacob, he actually sounds really sad.
So sad, right? And, you know, to be clear, millions of people every year do still check the box, and the money in this fund is just piling up. People, you know, candidates aren't taking it. Right now, there is about $300 million in this presidential campaign fund. It's just sitting there.
Do you check the box, Jacob, when you do your taxes?
I don't know is the honest answer. Like, I'm kind of ashamed because, like, I feel like I care about this kind of thing. The truth is I don't remember whether I check the box or not. Do you check the box? Or does your accountant check the box for you?
My accountant has never even asked me the question.
I'm assuming he defaults to no.
I hope so.
Default to no is kind of the end of the checkbox story.
Default to no.
Okay. Next item, the other item we're doing on the show today. Here, get your 1040.
Got it.
Okay, so let's go down. You know, we get going down the form here. Some more reasonable stuff. We mentioned wages, salaries, tips, line 7, totally reasonable. Alimony, which makes sense. And then you get down to line 24. This is the next one, the last one we're going to really dive into here, line 24. You want to hit it?
Yeah, certain business expenses of reservists, performing artists, and fee-basis government officials.
Reservists, performing artists, fee-basis government officials. Let's play one of these things is not like the other.
I'm going to go with performing artists.
Right? Yes, because reservists and fee-basis government officials, I expect to see them on my tax form, right? Like, sure, Congress is going to, you know, pass some special rule. Somebody's serving their country in the reserves, sure. Somebody has some unusual kind of government job, okay. But, like, actors and singers.
Mimes.
And mimes, jugglers. I do not expect to see them on the front of my tax form. So I looked into this and I found there's one person who had this idea of putting performing artists right here on my form 1040. And she happened to work just a few blocks from us. So she came into the studio. Her name's Sandra Karras. She's been an actor in New York for a long time. And back in the late 70s, she was running around doing the things, you know, doing the things young actors do. She was doing shows in little theaters. She was doing commercials. And then one spring, she stumbled into this new, I mean, I guess you would call it a hobby.
I got a bug in my head about income taxes and
wait,
whether
what?
Or not I,
where
yeah,
did that come from?
Well, because I was trying to do my own tax return and trying to figure out where in the Internal Revenue Code actors were.
She knew there was something about farmers in there. She thought there was special stuff for people in the military. So she figured there must be something for performing artists.
But this is the 1970s, right? It's before the internet. So she goes to one of these IRS reading rooms, which was a real thing, where it has all these forms and books and instructions on how to fill out your taxes.
I went into the reading room and I said, where's the publication on actors? You know, where's that? Where's that part? You know? And they said, dudes, you know, well, there's expenses, there are employee business expenses, there are travel expenses. And I, you know, my eyes started to glaze over.
They basically said actors, schmactors.
Yeah, right. Well, we don't like to use the term schmacting, but, you know. But, because I certainly don't do that. But they said, dude, I don't think you're going to find an actor part, but, you know, you'll find a lot of things that are helpful.
Sadly for her, the tax code treated actors like everybody else. Of course, she could write off her expenses, and she did have a lot of expenses.
agents' commissions, promotional materials, classes and coaching, transportation, just looking for work.
It's expensive to be a starving artist.
It's expensive to find work as a starving artist. Yes, it is.
Sandra gets really into taxes. She's taken tax classes before long. She's helping other actors write all those expenses off their taxes.
Then in the early 80s, she hears something that makes her really nervous. There might be a change coming to the tax code, and that might make it harder for people like her to write off work-related expenses on their taxes. So she goes to the head of the Theater Actors Union in New York.
I had just, you know, was this young, naive actor who said, I think we ought to do something about this, and then it snowballed.
And the head of the union gets all worked up about it, and he goes to other unions for movie actors and TV people and radio people, and they start going down to Washington.
Engaging lobbyists, sure. Meeting with people, and really doing the negotiations on the Hill, so to speak, in the cigar-filled rooms.
And they wind up not just blocking this change that Sandra was worried about, they wind up getting a new law that makes those deductions even more valuable for performing artists.
And we couldn't believe it. We just couldn't believe that it had happened. It was a big deal for a lot of little people.
I mean, you save more money off your taxes this way. That's the bottom line.
Yes. It's a sweet deal.
And this is how performing artists get onto page one of your 1040. They are one more special interest group with their own line in the tax code. Since then, Sandra Karas has become an expert in those special interests. She's a lawyer who does tax work.
We could go line by line through the front of the 1040, and you're going to see a special interest on every line.
And you are one of those special interests.
Yes, I'm one of those special interests. Yes.
That clearly we have a tax code that is the product of lots of special interests fighting for their line. I don't know. What do you think of that?
I'm ambivalent about it for a couple of reasons. The first of which is that it is so difficult for the average person to comprehend, it makes it unfair.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because you should be able to do your own tax returns and, you know, not have to struggle through all of this verbiage and to try and find something that might apply to you.
And that's partly related to all the special interests fighting for their little tweak in the tax code.
So that's one of the reasons. And the other reason is because the people with a lot of money get to really determine not only how much tax they pay, but the rates at which they pay it. And that's a problem for people who don't have a big voice, who, you know, can't make a lot of noise.
What Sandra Karas got for actors and what a lot of special interest groups get is deductions.
Yeah, and deductions sounds nice, right? It's just like, I take a little something off the top, you know? But a lot of the time, a deduction is the financial equivalent of the government writing you a check every year.
It's like government spending hidden in the tax code, which I guess is sort of the point.
Yeah, I talked about this with Sandra. If you had gone to Congress in 86 and said, performing artists are important for our culture, people who are really struggling and have these unusual high expenses deserve a check every year, what do you think they would have said?
What have you been smoking? Right?
This is not just some little thing for actors, ha, 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 whatever. This is huge. This is everywhere in the tax code. I will tell you, full disclosure, I'm a special interest. I get a huge break on my taxes every year because I have a mortgage, and I get to deduct the interest from that mortgage off my taxes. Saves me a ton of money. It's just like the government saying, hey, congratulations on taking out that big mortgage. Here's a big check we're going to write you every year. Noel, what do you got? Own it. What special interest are you?
Jacob, I am proud to tell you I have no idea. That is why I take my taxes to an accountant. He figures it out for me.
Right. Well, which is also part of the point. The reason people take their taxes to accountants is because the tax code is so complicated. The tax code is so complicated because of all these exceptions and deductions and special interests. And there really is, I think, a pretty clear economic argument to be made here. And that is, whatever you think tax rates should be, maybe you think they should be high, maybe you think they should be low, it doesn't matter. Whatever the rates are, that's fine. Set the rates there and keep the tax code simple. And if you want to help out performing artists or people with mortgages or whoever, great, do it. Just don't hide it in the tax code.
One last thing about the performing artist line.
Line 24.
Line 24. It only applies to performing artists who are below a certain income level, right? So the idea is to help struggling working artists.
You don't want to give a tax break to Brad Pitt or whatever.
Right, exactly. When the law passed back in 1986, your maximum income could be $16,000, which is about $35,000 today.
And today, that cap is still $16,000 a year. Obviously, it's very low. Almost nobody qualifies for it anymore. Sandra says she is hoping for another big push to get Congress to raise the cap. But for now, anyways, the performing artist line is just like the checkoff for the presidential campaign. It's this artifact from the past that's just sitting there on our tax form.
Our show today was produced by Nick Fountain.
Special help from our intern, Sally Helm. Thanks, Sally.
And I want to thank my accountant, Alex Rishkis. You can email us at planetmoney@npr.org.
We are on Facebook and Twitter, of course.
At Planet Money.
Noelle, are you on Twitter?
I am. At Noelle E. King.
I'm Jacob Goldstein on Twitter. If you're looking for something else to listen to, try the TED Radio Hour. It's hosted by the excellent Guy Raz. He has all the great TED speakers on there with him. You can find that show at npr.org/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jacob Goldstein.
And I'm Noelle King. Thanks for listening.